from KHOL, this is Jackson Unpacked, our podcast on news, music, and culture in Jackson Hole and around the Mountain West. And we're your hosts, Hannah Merzbach
and Dante Fablankney. Coming up on today's show, groups of men on both sides of the Tetons are coming together to get mental and emotional support.
Society tells men that we have to be strong, we have to be stoic, we have to be the rock. And at least my experience is that it's not always the case.
We'll hear more about the Teton men's groups later in the show.
And in our new series on the workers helping our community thrive, we hear from a Spanish language interpreter in our public schools.
There's a lot more that we can do. And we need more interpreters. We need more people to be bilingual.
These stories and more coming up on Jackson Unpacked. Backcountry skiing and snowboarding continue to become more popular in Jackson, partly because Teton Pass offers some of the most accessible backcountry terrain in the country. It's one of the reasons I got into this kind of skiing here, and I know that's true for many.
Yeah, Hannah, I'm looking forward to getting more into it. Since I moved here earlier this year, I've been looking at how recreationists are contributing to dangerous traffic conditions on the pass. We know it's prone to snow and ice, but thousands of people use it to commute between Wyoming and Idaho every day.
Yeah, you've been looking at some of the efforts underway to address this. One local nonprofit has stepped up to reduce traffic and cars and shuttle recreationists up and down the pass when town, county, and state officials haven't taken action yet. Let's take a listen.
How's it going this morning?
How are you doing?
Good.
Tough day weather-wise, I think.
You think?
On a slightly snowy Saturday, Rick Gordon is at Old Pass Road, near Wilson, at the base of the pass. He's driving a boxy white passenger van to shuttle recreationists. Dirt and snow cover the van's sides, and metal ski racks hang on the roof and rear.
Nice. What's that?
A candy bucket.
I feel like a chauffeur.
Inside, a bowl of Reese's and other fun-sized treats sit on the floor. Miniature toy dinosaurs are arranged within a notch on the dash, and a schedule is posted for passengers. The van starts at the Stilson lot near Moose Wilson Road and goes all the way up to the top of the pass and Coal Creek, popular spots for a ski tour. Gordon says it runs like, quote, Swiss timing, always on time and reliable. He pulls into Coal Creek.
You see this like right on time to the minute, but again, there's no one here, you know.
Filling the van has been a problem all winter. Gordon volunteers to drive for Teton Backcountry Alliance, a local recreation nonprofit that has bared the financial burden of providing a free shuttle for recreationists on a, quote, shoestring budget. But with few riders, it may not be making a difference yet. On a powder day, it can still feel impossible to get a parking spot at the top of Teton Pass unless you arrive at the crack of dawn. And according to Gary Kofinas, who leads the Backcountry Alliance,
there are times up there when there are 9-10 cars waiting for a parking place.
Earlier this year, the Teton Pass Corridor Study identified a similar shuttle as one potential solution. Released by the Federal Highway Administration, the Wyoming Department of Transportation, Teton County, and others, the report says a range of improvements could make the pass safer, more accessible, and less congested for commuters and recreationists. But it's all up to local governments to find funding and implement the plans, which hasn't happened yet.
Why wait for agencies and government to do anything? Let's just try it.
KHOL made several attempts to talk to a Teton County official, but nobody was available to comment. Kofinas says the Alliance has done several test runs of a pass shuttle, but this was the first year they decided to run it consistently all winter, in part because of the study published in February. The report proposes major capital improvements like paving, widening, and expanding roads and parking lots at Phillips Bench, Coal Creek, and Teton Pass Summit, and introducing services like the shuttle.
This year was an experiment. We're going to evaluate. Overall, I think it worked. I think it can work better, and we can get more ridership in the future.
The nonprofit estimates it takes about 2 to 3 years to establish a shuttle service and believes more recreationists could benefit in the future if they just knew about it. Or just stumble into it. A group of friends, largely from Utah, did exactly that, wearing tutus, leis, floral shirts, fuzzy raccoon hats, and bell bottoms.
Had we known about the free shuttle, that would have been the key reason why we came to visit. Yeah.
It's Ella Watala's birthday. Clad in ski boots, a silver skin suit, and a rainbow tutu, she and the group of 12 costumed skiers slipped into their ski boots and threw their skis on the rear rack at Coal Creek.
We're stoked to be out here, stoked to be skiing. Thankful for a free shuttle, so awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
And
no bad snow.
Yeah, no bad snow. Only bad attitudes.
They are Rick Gordon's only passengers of the day as they clonk and giggle into the van in preparation for the short trip to the top of the pass.
Good snow's waiting.
Yeah. As for Gordon, he hopes the shuttle can continue, making the pass safer for recreationists, doing its small part in reducing cars for environmental purposes, and building the ski community he values.
Does the shuttle help the parking challenges here? And it should help, but it needs to be used more to really make a difference in that.
The shuttle wrapped up service for this year at the end of March. It's possible they may run again next year if funding and volunteers stick around. Dante Fobola Inkney, KHOL News.
You're listening to Jackson Unpacked. Another popular area for winter recreation is across the border in Idaho. Mountain ranges like the Big Holes draw not just skiers, but also snowmobilers. Though there's not as many resources over there as the Tetons on how to stay safe. Experts have estimated that 11 avalanche deaths have happened in the eastern and southeastern part of the state in recent years. In a story published by Boise State Public Radio and High Country News, reporter Rachel Cohen dives into what she describes as a donut hole of unknown danger. She sat down with me to talk about that gap.
There's no avalanche forecast center that's exclusively dedicated to assessing hazards in the snow and communicating them with the public in this area. There are four avalanche centers that surround this area. There's, you know, the Bridger Teton in Wyoming. There's the Gallatin National Forest Avalanche Center in Montana, the Utah Avalanche Center, and the Sawtooth Avalanche Center in Idaho. And, you know, three out of the four of these do have some forecasted areas that go into the mountains in eastern Idaho. But there are also mountain ranges that are quite popular for recreation that are outside of those zones.
So one problem is really, you know, the lack of a forecast center. And I know another one is more awareness. I know some of these people who died in recent years weren't wearing beacons or didn't have their beacons turned on. I know you went out on an avalanche course for snowmobilers in Driggs. Tell me about what that course looked like. It sounds like maybe this awareness problem could be changing a little bit.
Yeah, there definitely are more ad hoc education initiatives going on in eastern Idaho and people that are taking initiative to help others learn more about the risks of avalanches. This training that I attended was run by the Mountain Riding Lab. So at this avalanche training, it was all snowmobilers. Some of them were local, some of them were from out of state, like the Midwest. And, you know, if you've taken an avalanche course for skiing, it's pretty similar. You know, they go over in the morning before they go out into the field, they talk about the avalanche, you know, hazards, and they talk about the weather forecast, and they talk about the snow. But, you know, when they're in the field, they're also talking about things that are more specialized for snowmobilers and just how a snowmobile would move through the mountains from one spot to the other, and how they would seek out safe terrain. But there's still a gap between the amount of resources and education that's tailored for skiers, for example, compared to snowmobilers.
Yeah, and I know one of the people that you met at that training is Taylor Anderson.
Yeah, I was grateful for the opportunity to talk with Taylor, who was one of the students who was in this avalanche course. She had grown up skiing, but she, in recent years, had really fallen in love with snowmobiling, and particularly in the backcountry. And she was on a team, and one of the previous teammates actually passed away in an avalanche in eastern Idaho a few years ago.
Having people close to us pass away in avalanches really kind of opened your eyes and perspective on how powerful being out in the snow really is.
You know, I think it just inspired, you know, more awareness and focus on this issue and the danger among that group.
The trainings can definitely go a long way. I know from doing like my AVI-1 skiing training, one of the first things they taught us was to always be looking at that Bridger-Teton Avalanche Center forecast in the morning before you go out. Obviously, you're making your own decisions and like assessing conditions when you're out there, but that forecast for me as a skier is always a foundation. And these folks over in Idaho just, you know, they can do all the training they want, but still just don't really have that same resource if you're going into like the big holes and those kinds of areas. What's being done to address that gap?
I know that there has been some movement to increase the amount of community observations in mountain ranges like this and in places that don't necessarily have a daily forecast. And community observations can be helpful because, you know, maybe someone spotted an avalanche one day and you can use that to make an informed decision. Of course, it's not quite the same as having an expert go out there into the field every week. And so the challenge is that for areas like this that don't have daily forecasts is that finding the resources to expand the amount of people who can go out there on the ground and to expand the weather stations that are localized for that area is difficult. I spoke with Simon Trotman from the National Avalanche Center, and he said, essentially, we know what to do for areas like this. We know that we need more education, and we know that we need more localized avalanche forecasting information.
I would say almost every single avalanche center in the United States is struggling with this same question, which is, do we need to adjust our boundaries? And if we do, what does that mean and how do we fund it?
The question is how to make that possible and how to make it happen.
What should we look out for next?
There is a working group of the neighboring avalanche centers. They're, you know, talking, they're trying to come up with solutions for this area. I think eventually they would love to have a forecaster who's based on the ground there. Maybe they work for one of the local avalanche centers. And so I think, you know, you might see that working group proposing some sort of solution for eastern Idaho. And they said that, you know, whatever solution they propose, it will probably need to come with some sort of fundraising component. And the question is, who's in charge of that? Is it one of the affiliated nonprofits of the Idaho Center? Is it the nonprofit that's associated with the Bridger-Teton Center? That's one of the questions that's up in the air.
That was reporter Rachel Cohen, who reported on efforts to make snowmobiling more safe in eastern Idaho for Boise State Public Radio and High Country News. You can check out that story on their websites. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Jackson Unpacked from KHOL, where we showcase reporting and interviews on news, music, and culture in Jackson Hole and around the Mountain West. New episodes of Jackson Unpacked drop every other Friday, wherever you get your podcasts.
Jackson Unpacked is generously sponsored by the Snake River Sporting Club. At nearly 1,000 acres, this private western community accesses the Snake River and Bridger-Teton National Forest, not to mention a golf course, equestrian center, and fully functioning ranch. More information about excursions, amenities, and lifestyle at snakeriversportingclub.com.
You're listening to Rocco De Luca and Johnny Shepherd from the band Mighty Glad. They played live in the K-12 studios before a recent show at the Virginian Saloon. Here the duo is performing their song, They Don't Live Long, which was on the soundtrack of Martin Scorsese's award-winning film, Killers of the Flower Moon. You can head over to 891KHOL.org to hear more live music and interviews with local musicians and bands in our studio.
Thanks for joining us. I'm Dante Fopola-Inkney. Workers in Jackson Hole face unique challenges to power the community. The beauty, wild nature, and outdoor access the region offers are some of the great perks of life here. But servers, educators, nurses, home builders, and more often have to deal with the high cost of living, long commutes, and for some, learning new languages. In a new series of radio diaries from KHOL, we get to know more about some of the folks that help our community thrive and what drives them to stay here.
Camila.
Sylvia Davila is a Spanish language interpreter at Jackson Hole Elementary School. Standing in the school halls, she greets parents and teachers on a Wednesday afternoon as they walk by. Recent estimates put Teton County's Latino demographic at roughly 30% of its total population, not including those who commute from neighboring areas to work. Davila walks us through her job, her journey to Jackson from Mexico City, and her efforts to integrate the Latino community in the town's public schools.
My name is Silvia Davila Tellez. So I studied the career of an interpreter and translator. I have lived in Mexico City. I was born over there, and I came over here in 1998. My sister Carmina was already working here, and she told me that this was a really great place to be in. When I was in Mexico, my father was already having economical problems, and I decided to give my kids and myself an opportunity to come over here and have them learn English. My favorite part of living in Jackson is the place. I mean, I come from huge, cosmopolitan and beautiful city, which is Mexico City. And coming over here is just the other side of the coin, just going outside, seeing the snow when you wake up and you see the sky. And I mean, we have a lovely place. I love this place. My day starts showering and then arriving to school. The first thing I do when I come here, I go to the lunchroom and I mingle with all the kids, K through fifth grade, and I just supervise. And then I come back over here to my office, and then I start looking at my email. Let me tell you, Mondays are, oh my gosh, when I open my computer and I see Monday emails, it's like, okay. I usually start translating the letters that go home to the Latino parents, and I translate them from kinder to fifth grade teachers. So I start getting this letter from this teacher, this letter from the other teacher. So in between the translations, throughout the day, I get a lot of interruptions, phone calls that parents need something. Or that the teachers need me to call the parents because the kid needs this or that. So I get involved in too many things. And in one of the interpreters meeting that I just went like last week, they were asking, if you were a hero, which hero would you like to be? I said, I would love to be Flash, because then I could just do so many things. So talking about the Latino community, I think they're doing their best effort to get their kids educated. They call me a lot to find out about, you know, resources and everything. They struggle with housing, and the rents are just so high. They have to work probably 2-3 jobs. They have to work so much. Sometimes they don't have enough time And I would love to have more time to help each grade level with resources and everything. I know teachers give 100%, 120% of their time and effort, but there's a lot more that we can do. And we need more interpreters. We need more people to be bilingual, to be able to help. But I love what I do. I love the kids. It's something that I enjoy a lot. You come over here and you get hugs from the little ones, and then they tell you about their day. And it's just amazing. So many things that you can learn from the kids. And I just love to be here.
Sylvia Davila is a Spanish language interpreter at Jackson Hole Elementary School. This radio diary was produced by KHOL contributor Kieran Hadley. Over the next few weeks, we'll be hearing from more residents about what drives them to stay in Jackson Hole and the challenges they face living here. If you are interested in sharing your story, drop us a note at news@jhcr.org.
Up next on Jackson Unpacked, we're talking about mental health, in particular, mental health for men.
Yeah, this is a huge issue. Startling statistics. According to Jackson's Mental Health and Recovery Services, this is a silent crisis. In fact, Wyoming has some of the highest rates of suicide in the country, and it's a big problem for middle-aged men.
Yeah, but there's a growing awareness here of the need to support men's mental health. Groups of men are coming together on both sides of the Tetons for emotional support, both in public settings and more private ones, like people's homes.
Right. Hannah, you went along to one group.
Yeah, I stopped by the beginning of one meeting in Jackson last month and put together the piece you're about to listen to.
Yeah, let's hear it.
Eight men sit in chairs in a circle in front of a stage and bright red curtains. They're in the Pink Garter Theater in downtown Jackson, tonight's location for the third official Teton Men's Group. They're each scribbling on torn off pieces of paper.
It's as simple as that. You just write your name, which color you are, toss it in a bucket.
The group's founder, Brian Sweat, says that color represents their level of stress on a continuum model. Green is good, while red's a crisis. Sweat says he likes to start all of his men's groups like this.
To kind of get a baseline and record the data as we move through these events. So 2 years from now, we can look back and say, hey, we were averaging somewhere yellow or orange before, and now we're seeing improvement.
Sweat, an even-tempered yogi and software engineer, tells tonight's attendees that these events were inspired by a local tragedy last fall.
Men's group came to fruition.
Just over the border in Victor, Idaho, a pregnant woman, Callie Randall, and her toddler were allegedly killed by her husband. For many who knew the couple, including Sweat, this came completely out of left field. And for him, it hit particularly close to home.
I actually lost a sister the same way a long time ago. And when this event happened, I started grieving again and reflecting on my life and asked myself a question. How would my life have been different if I had support, if I had groups of people that I could talk to, especially men, about what I was going through? And when I thought about that.
He says he saw that women often have tight-knit circles to get mental support. So why not men?
Society tells men that we have to be strong, we have to be stoic, we have to be the rock. And at least my experience is that it's not always the case. We end up getting lost and confused. And without the right guidance and support, it's very difficult to live up to the social standards.
So earlier this year, he started holding monthly meetups for men on the Wyoming and Idaho side of the Tetons. It's not therapy, but a place to be open with one another. And there's demand for such a space. At the same time, Jacksonite Will Finney, who's here tonight, was launching a similar effort.
Goal is to just like give men who maybe are less often feeling the need to like communicate about their feelings with each other a place to do so in like a very specific, like organized group.
Benny, who has a handlebar mustache and a big, bright smile, says he and a close group of his male friends recently started gathering every other week at each other's houses to have these kinds of conversations.
Things, you know, that are happening with a partner, with work, with life, with anything along your journey. And yeah, the goal is to just like give.
So he partnered with Sweat and local comedian Andrew Munns, and they're all holding space for people at tonight's event.
People come and maybe they're not sure what they're going to share. And then all of a sudden people start talking and like all these things come out and you're like, oh, whoa, these things that I was feeling or maybe not even feeling have like turned and morphed into something like totally different.
Finney is all about finding ways to create community outside some of the more traditional ways in the area, like in the outdoors.
There's the kind of friends that you go skiing with, friends that I go fishing with.
Michael Devine has been a consistent member of Sweat's groups.
So I think talking about more sensitive things in kind of a public setting allows for more of those, just a different level of connection that I think a lot of people don't have.
And since starting to share what he's going through, he's realized that everybody's going through similar things.
I've kind of gone through my own personal struggles and struggles with addiction. So I think for me, and I think a lot of people, being able to share your experiences in the hopes that they help someone else is also a very a powerful part of gathering in this way.
Back in the circle, Brian Sweat lays out the ground rules for tonight's event.
First rule, most importantly, is everything that is said in this room is confidential. In the event that there is conflict,
nobody is required to speak, but everyone has the opportunity to talk and get the group's full, undivided attention. As they begin, Sweat encourages everyone to come up with a story or issue they're dealing with.
Maybe a problem with society, maybe a problem specifically with yourself. There's pens over there. Take a moment, write something down that you want to share or would like to discuss with the group.
And with that, the group is back scribbling on scraps of paper once again, preparing to share and support each other. Hannah Merzbach, K12 News.
That's it today on Jackson Unpacked.
Original music for the show is performed by the local band Strumbucket.
I'm Dante Fobla-Inkney.
And I'm Hannah Merzbach. And this is K-Chowell Jackson.